welcome back to Winged and Ready. I'm very excited to be here today with our guest, Kel Haney. Kel has her own consulting firm, Kel Haney Consulting, and she works in a very much needed segment, working with not-for-profits, helping them raise money, getting dollars through the door. But it's different than grassroots, and it's different than major donors. I'm not gonna steal her thunder. I'm gonna let Kel introduce herself. Kel, thank you so much for being here today. Can you tell us a little bit about you and, of course, your company?
Thanks, Diane. I'm so excited to be here with you. So at Kel Haney Consulting, we focus specifically on training, coaching, consulting with not-for-profits, specifically for mid-level donors. So what you were already alluding to, the idea that mid-level needs its own strategy. Mm-hmm. And that's different than what we do with grassroots. And this might come as a little bit of a surprise to some of your audience, but it's also different than how we work with major gifts folks. And so at the core of this strategy is a 5-minute fundraising ask, which I recommend you do.
5 minutes.
Yeah, 5 minutes. And here's the real drum roll, is to pick up the phone and call them.
Wow. That's so hard for people to do, isn't it?
I know. It's so hard. And yet it is so effective. And it can feel so good to connect with other humans.
Who doesn't like feeling good?
I know. We all want to feel good. And that's my whole goal, is that when the fundraiser or the board member or the executive director picks up that phone and calls that community member, it's, hey, everybody's palms start to get sweaty when they go to do that, but that they actually have a genuine connection, like what I like to think of as a micro connection during that 5-minute phone call. And I think especially nowadays that we're spending so much time working hybrid, going to the grocery store, it's automated. You don't even need to like work with a checkout person, pick up your coffee. It's already made for you. Like, I know we're all craving, we're all as humans wired for connection. So this is just one other way to connect.
The idea is that
we're connecting with our community in a way that we all feel good about.
Yeah. I love that you're harnessing human connection to, I don't want to say put a Band-Aid over, because it's not that. You're really filling a hole. There's a bucket of dollars that's not being looked at. Can you define a little bit what those different segments are, grassroots, middle, and major?
Sure. There's it's truly different organizations. It's not even necessarily about their size and their budget. Look at those buckets in different ways. I think the most general way to say that is mid-level tends to be a 4-digit gift. Mm-hmm. So it tends to be 9,999. Mm-hmm. But that can skew depending on the organization. And honestly, part of what I do, part of what I do is that I get in and I'm looking at where are people already settling in terms of their amounts of gifts with the organization. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, most of the time, that's about the organization's perception of money and thoughts about what should be a major gift versus a mid versus a small gift, as opposed to how that person in their mind thinks about it. So part of it is that I look at it and sometimes it's that major gifts is like, they're like, oh, it's a major gift once it's $2,500 or above. And that's when I think, well, that's not terribly sustainable, because we want to keep growing. And as we're growing, we're not going to have that time to necessarily spend as much as we'd like to, the same time and energy with someone who's donating 2.5K as somebody who's donating a 5-digit or higher gift.
Right.
So you want to like set the expectations, not just for the community member, but also it's about setting your organization up for success as you continue to scale.
I think there's so much to unpack in that. I'm just going to bullet point out what I'm hearing and want to discuss more. One, I think at that donor level, it's a great way to engage the next generation and to bring in potentially a junior board or people who want to be more active with the charity and they'll feel involved. Two, I think it sounds like a way to refocus potentially executive directors or anyone who's in development within a charity, I imagine there's probably not a charity too big or too small that might need to reframe how they're thinking about donor dollars. And yes. Then three, I just love the connectivity. And I think that is something that could probably be extrapolated and used in other areas of business development and strategy. So I don't want to take you away or us away from, I know, an area we both adore and find near and dear to our mm-hmm. hearts, which is the not-for-profit yeah. world. But can we talk a little bit about those three things, starting with maybe next gen or getting younger people involved?
Yeah, it's funny you brought that up. I actually, I unfortunately have a lot of dental issues. So I was at the periodontist yesterday, and I have an amazing periodontist, Dr. Saltz, who's also younger. And we just started talking about what I do a couple visits ago. And he's been tasked with his periodontal society with reaching out and engaging with the folks who are brand new to mm-hmm. the society. I don't know, maybe it's association. It's probably an association. So it's basically like, here's the young periodontist. Like, let's like set him off with the rest of the younger people in the community. And it's interesting because I'm encouraging him to set different metrics for himself than for some of his colleagues that are, you know, some of these folks, as they're getting ready to retire or they're going corporate, you know, he was telling me or giving, you know, giving those five, sometimes even six figure gifts. But Adam is supposed to be working with these periodontists who are just out of school. And so to me, the idea of even asking for a gift for someone who is just getting their practice started, I don't think that's a great way to start a relationship. It's right. the same way when I work with higher ed. It's like, look at how long has it been since somebody has graduated? Also, we have some really great ways to do a little bit of donor research mm-hmm. to learn a little bit about somebody's capacity, not just their capacity to give, but also their propensity. How frequently do they give, or their affinity, do they give to your type of organization? So I really recommend just getting more strategic with the segments, because mm-hmm. you're not getting off on the right foot with a young professional who, you know, is still working through student debt, who is still, you know, getting under firm ground to then go and like ask them for $1,000 gift. Like yeah. that's not necessarily in alignment with what they can do. And that's not a great way to start that relationship. So I really recommend that you've got some research behind that, because you also can't just assume because somebody is just starting on their career that they don't have the capacity to give. Like right. we don't know what their familial means are. Like we have no idea. And so what I always say is like, we don't know. So we're going to learn what we can and then kind of go from there. So yeah, it's a great way. And part of it is just getting people out and getting them involved with the community. Yeah. So my advice to my periodontist was, just connect with those folks, these people who are new to the association, get them in person, get them engaged with each other. Like, yeah. like go ahead and just get them involved, get them to understand the why of the organization first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, within a couple of years, and this is just different than what I would do with phone calls, but in that particular case, it's like, just get people involved and then you'll start to figure out
right.
what kind of capacity do they have right now. Again, like the engagement yeah. is most important.
You're harnessing connectivity again. So
exactly.
it's really, that's sort of your rubber band. You stretch it in a lot of different areas.
Yeah.
I like that. Exactly. I also like it's not necessarily reframing the ask for the donor, whoever's giving, but mm-hmm. it's asking the society or the charity or the association to reframe on their end. If you can't just look at somebody who might be a younger member, let's say under 40, and say, okay, you're under 40, go talk to people your age and get money. That's not going to work.
Yes, it's so transactional. It is so transactional. And like this particular, my perio is like the most outgoing, lovely human. And for this to be shrinking him and making him feel nervous, like it just goes to show that it's not in alignment. Like the way he's being asked to do this isn't in alignment. So, that's really interesting to see.
Yeah. So you and energetically, if he's nervous, you said sweaty palms yes. before, like you have to figure out what kind of energy is being yeah. put into it and make sure that it's good energy.
Yeah. A kind of cheeky catchphrase I use is taking the ick out of the ask. And then the big idea behind that is that we're all a focus group of one. what makes you feel icky, Diane, is going to be something else that makes me feel icky, or maybe not even that word. So I think when I was talking with the periodontist, was like, it's making me feel uncomfortable, you know, and I was like, I hear that. So like, to me, that's about an ick, but for you, that might be like truly like a discomfort. So it's about being able to identify what that is in each of us and then get clear about what is feeling uncomfortable or making us nervous, causing us anxiety, making us feel the ick, however we articulate that for ourselves, mm-hmm. to figure out how to course correct in a really personal way.
And I think that's natural too, like embracing yeah. how we naturally get nervous in those kinds of settings. I mean, you've said you have a theater background. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody gets nervous before they perform.
Yes.
Everybody gets nervous that they might be judged if they're doing an outbound phone call to somebody they don't really know very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't mitigate the nerves.
No, you have to work with them. So I think back to what you were, just as we're figuring out, you know, this moment that we're in our country and in our world, it's just really about being in the given circumstances that we have in the moment. Mm-hmm. So that is given circumstances that are both, what are we facing as a country, as a world, but also as personal and as internal as like, what are we facing? So I actually recommend when people are on these phone calls, if they're feeling nervous or if once they're getting to the actual ask, that's the part that makes them feel nervous, just to share that.
Right.
Just to say, I have to say, I really like talking to you, Diane. Like, this part makes me feel a little nervous. Like, that's okay. You know, like, it's like, share with that person. Or sometimes it's that they've, you know, someone who's making outbound calls, they don't get someone picking up for a while. And then somebody finally picks up and then it throws them a bit. So my recommendation is like, share that. Go ahead and say, oh my gosh, Diane, I'm so glad you picked up the phone. I just called 4 people and no one picked up. I'm a little tongue-tied, or I'm feeling a little yeah. starstruck.
Yeah.
Like I used to like have fun with that. I'm a little starstruck. You actually pick up the phone, you know? So it's like, we're starting from a place that's vulnerable, that's specific. That's like, just like, I'm a human to human. This is not, you yeah. don't have to worry, oh, that I'm talking to AI or that this is a scammer or even a telemarketer. It's like, no, I'm talking to a human who is passionate about the same organization that I am.
Yeah. That's so funny. You totally took me in like a throwback to college in the 90s, where part of my community service was working, you know, dialing for dollars, going in
oh, yeah.
after dinner in the evening, going into the giving office and calling mm-hmm. alum and asking. And it was always mm-hmm. during dinner time. So you yeah. always got the no answers. Then when you did get an answer, it's not a good time because it's dinner.
Yeah.
It was awful. It was so scary.
Yeah. So scary. Yeah, I've been working with the University of Illinois Foundation as my first higher ed client, like shifting how those call centers can work and mm-hmm. that really trying to figure out how to make that a professional development opportunity for the students.
Yeah.
And part of that came from talking to them when I trained them, was like, what's your why? Why University of Illinois? Like, why are you here? And also, like, what is one of your favorite parts about being here? And then the questions ended up being like, you're going to be calling alumni. So like, what do you genuinely want to ask them? And I remember a few students who were getting ready to graduate, they felt really nervous about what was going to happen to their friendships, mm-hmm. that their friendships were the most important to them. And I said, I hear you. Sometimes it would be that a communications major was calling someone who was an engineering alum and would think like, what do I have in common with this person? And so that's where I'd say, like, you can just tell them on the phone, like, thank them for their last gift. Say you'd love to get them more involved. But first and foremost, that you're getting ready to graduate and, you know, want to know if and like that how important your friends are. And do you want to actually, like, tell me a little bit about what that was like for you? Are you still
so
in
true.
Contact with anybody?
That's
you know?
So true.
So I'm like, why not ask them things you're actually curious about? Because they were trained before that to be like, oh, this is time for quote unquote rapport. You know, it was like so militant and so synthetic and like honestly felt ingenuous and maybe even a little manipulative to me. And I said, okay, you've got an opportunity. You're talking to someone who has more life experience. What do you actually want to ask them?
Right.
Like
that's, and when you get to dig into other people's story, back to your what's the why, when people start yeah. talking about their story, then you can find that why. And then Mm-hmm. It leads to good outcomes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I will say it's fascinating. I can't tell you how many times I work with a lot of performing arts organizations asking their why you learn something you would never have learned before. So, you know, it's like a ballet company. Turns out their great grandmother was a ballerina. And we did not have that in the CRM and the customer relationships manager. That didn't show up on any research anywhere. Or, oh, their granddaughter is actually like a theater major right now. And that's part of why they're so involved with theater. Like, we learn these connections that like aren't showing up on research. That's the only way. You're not going to get that from an email exchange.
No.
You're not going to learn these things.
That's so fun. It's fundraising. I like it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about your client base. Are there any stereotypical hesitancies or lessons to be learned that you think are super important, especially considering our listeners? It may be a non-for-profit, it may be a society. What's some free advice that you could give to them?
Yeah, I'd say first and foremost, I mean, I watch organizations be hesitant to do this kind of outreach period. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because they're afraid. Everybody has their own stories. So I will frequently in training ask, when was a moment that you got the ick from some kind of fundraising solicitation? So all of the data, all of the surveys say that community members who are associated with not-for-profits don't like phone calls. Mm. Like something like only 2% wants them. And that's because they don't have them done well, because they don't have a good experience. That's why.
Right.
That is not a reason not to do it. That's a reason to change the habit, change the perspective, and to actually do the outreach. So there's a lot of misconception period about what these calls are like, and because everyone's had really bad telemarketing calls, and sometimes even not-for-profits hire telemarketing companies,
right.
And
right.
I think it's a really bad idea. So I hear that a lot. I hear a lot, well, I don't pick up my phone, or I only respond to texts, or don't ever call me at dinner time. Well, what's dinner time? Is that 5 o'clock? Is that 7 o'clock? Is that 9 o'clock? That's a very long
right.
amount of time for different people. Sometimes it's like you get somebody and they're like, how dare you call me? I'm driving. Or, oh, I'm driving. This is the perfect time to talk. So I think the big thing to remember is, like I already said, we're all a focus group of one. So the way that you engage with your phone, with people who call you, is going to be different than me, which is going to be different than each person who's listening to this. So we're all a focus group of one. Something else is that truly the major gifts, tactics, and strategy shouldn't just be implemented to mid-level. So I wrote about this on LinkedIn this week, and it went a little crazy, not quite viral, but a lot of people are responding.
Because frequently
I go in to organizations and they're like, well, don't I need to make an appointment to call them, aka send another email? And I say, no, like, that's not worth your time and energy. Just pick up the phone, call them. I have a whole methodology of how to do that, even the first 15 seconds of the call. But just pick up the phone and call them. And they will tell you very quickly if this is not a good time to talk. They will tell you very quickly what's going on their end.
Yeah.
So, and then you can set a time with them. And what I always recommend is you tell them when works, as opposed to waiting for them. Part of what I do that's a little different is hosting. Is like, I recommend that you're always hosting the call. So if you're the one making the call, there's some like specific strategies that I recommend to make sure that you, as the person who've picked up the phone and call, are hosting that person, just like you would with the kind of kindness and specificity that you would if they were in your own home.
That's so interesting.
On the call.
Because yeah. I would never think of a phone call that way. But I could imagine how that shifts the, back to energy, shifts the energy of the person who both is making the call, as well as the receptivity for the person that's answering.
Yes, yes. And something else that comes up a lot is just really looking at these calls as transaction. Mm-hmm. And saying and maybe being nervous that they will be seen as transactional. Sometimes it's that the results are that like leadership is expecting aren't realistic, but just as often it's just fear that this, if we ask, it's going to come off as transactional. So the way I train is that when someone is making one of these calls on behalf of an organization, they're focused on the forest that is long-term connectivity, long-term relationship building, building with this community member, as opposed to focusing on the tree that is this particular conversation. Like, mm-hmm. did they say yes or no? Did they give in this moment? If we're really focused on the relationship building instead of the specific transaction, the money always follows. Always, always, always. I don't even worry about it because they'll follow. And like, people know when we're actually genuinely connecting with them, as opposed to I'm doing this because I want you to make this one gift and never talk to you again.
Right.
So, and I also want both people to hang up the phone and feel good when they hang up, both sides.
Yeah, that's an awesome thing to train and coach people on in general. And I'm sure it has spillover into how people treat their everyday life and how they, maybe they will go to the checkout counter instead of the scanning.
Yes!
It's interesting too, you say the ick. I have so much to say on my end, and I won't, around financial behavioral biases. And I'm sure that is probably your bread and butter, is not only recognizing those, but removing what I call the money blockages.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting because that's not something that's going to happen when an organization brings me in for an hour or even 4 hours to train their team. Mm-hmm. But what I do is I recommend some specific questions to start asking themselves, and they can, you know, write them down and journal on that. And what's interesting, and so some of the questions I ask are like, talk, you know, like just to explore their earliest memories around money. And what were the things that you were taught, either verbally taught or physically taught about money? And it is so fascinating that, you know, you'll hear money doesn't grow on trees, or, you know, people who have money like are bad people, mm-hmm. or, you know, like you'll just hear all, you know, you get it in your line of work all the time. But what's interesting is that when I plant that seed in training, once I'm further coaching an individual and they get more comfortable with me, sometimes weeks or months later, even like sometimes years later, they'll say, Kel, you know what this is making me think about? Or it's getting them to just truly mean like, oh, this is my own personal block that I'm working through. And that is, everybody's is unique and fascinating.
Yeah. It's so interesting to me. I was thinking just yesterday morning how if I were in a room, I wanted to ask this question. How many of you have received money as a gift? Something you've achieved in your life, or as a recognition, or maybe it was a relative from afar who couldn't be there for you. They sent you, it could be $5 in a card or something, but how many of you received money as a gift? I would imagine almost everyone in the room would raise their hands.
Yeah.
But at the same time, everyone in the room would have some kind of hang up around money. So the duality of you can receive it as a gift and it can make you happy, but you also have these other thoughts or experiences that make you very unhappy, nervous, scared, unaware, you know, the list goes on. So how do you get people to bridge that and realize it doesn't have to be so bifurcated in life?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I do is basically focus the rest of the conversation as personal and vulnerable as possible. And then what I actually recommend, this is really hard to do, Diane. And it's like, it was easier for me when I started, because I started fundraising when I was like 22 years old or something. Like I did not, my views on money had not been totally formed. And I felt like I was calling these people. They were like 40 and above, and I thought they were so old. You know, I'm like, well, they have something I don't have anyway. And that's harder when, you know, you've had more life experience. But what I recommend is doing everything we can, and this is some real mindset shift, to take out our own thoughts, feelings, perceptions about the amount for which we're asking. So it's the one part of the conversation when I really recommend that you just put out that ask. And part of that is that you could say, you could be on the phone with someone and you as the fundraiser think, oh my gosh, I'm going to do it. I'm going to ask for $10,000. So getting on the phone and saying, Diane, I know $10,000 is a lot, but would you consider going on from there? What if, Diane, you were actually considering a $20,000 gift?
Right.
And I commented on how much $10,000 was.
Right.
If I had just said, you know, Diane, I'm just going to go for it. Is there a world in which you would do $10,000? And then that's up to you in that moment. I'm taking out my personal mm-hmm. thoughts about it, giving you some space. And if in that moment you're like, okay, I'll stick with 10, or you could be like, actually, Kelly, I was thinking 20, but I didn't put a qualification on it.
Yeah.
Goes the other way as well. I would recommend never saying something like, well, could you just do $50? For all you know, that person is doing some mental gymnastics, some like mathematical gymnastics in their mind right now to be like, what am I shifting around? I'm going to like not get that coffee out that for the next month or whatever that is, because I really want to make this $50 gift. So like, I recommend never commenting on how much the gift is, period.
Yeah. Every dollar has a job. That's something I say all the time.
Yes,
every dollar has a job. So
oof, I love that.
Put it to work. If you're not figuring out every job for every dollar, then it doesn't matter to your point. It could be 50, could be 10, could be $100,000.
Yes.
They all have a job.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I love the idea of just like the joy in the job. You know, it's like at work, as someone who works for myself, it's like I know I've got, you know, the percentage that's going to my taxes. And as soon as I get any kind of income, I'm splitting that up immediately. And like, there's a joy to me in that of like how I'm proud of myself of, okay, I'm already like securing, thinking about my quarterly estimate, you know, and like, that doesn't have to be like a chain I'm wearing around my neck. That doesn't have to be like an arduous, terrible, annoying thing. That can be beautiful.
Right.
Like that's the cost of doing business, and I'm proud of that. So I love thinking about that, like each dollar. And if that, you know, $5 coffee is the thing that like rocks your world and makes your day great, go for it. And like how beautiful that those five of those dollars, that's their job.
Yeah.
There's a personification to that that I really enjoy. So thank you.
I can't wait to see what you do with it, because I have a feeling you're going to take it and move it forward. So I look forward to being a part of that journey with you. And then, you know, my third question to you was, how can this be deployed or thought of beyond fundraising? I think that mm-hmm. this is, you know, a concept that would work really well inside of organizations, and I don't want to lead you into what your responses will be, but mm-hmm, how mm-hmm. have you seen it going beyond just the fundraising aspect with your clients?
Sure. I mean, with not-for-profit clients, something that I'm seeing that I love is that it's becoming larger in terms of things like a thank-a-thon. So something I'm very excited about and continuing to pilot and explore, especially with larger not-for-profits, is like, there's no reason that the development team, that the fundraisers need to be the only people in the organization that are picking up the phone to say thank you. So I have a training that I do that trains the entire organization, because to me, all not-for-profit, anyone who is engaged with a not-for-profit as a staff member, as a volunteer, as a board member, as a leader, as any kind of other community member, is an ambassador of some sort. So there's a way to train those folks. So have them in January and February make all of the thank you calls. The one thing I will just say to your audience, in case you just want to try it, which is great, is the one thing I would say is like not to ever say, don't worry, I'm not calling to ask you for money. Like yeah. never say like, don't start the call with like, don't worry, I'm not asking you for money, because guess what? Hopefully your org will be doing that. It might not be you, but you never want to, you know, go ahead and give a negative connotation to that. So
right.
saying like, you can say, I'm simply calling to say thank you, and here's like my curious question, and I just want to connect with you further. So I'm seeing that within the sector. Something else I'm interested in outside of the sector, you know, just in terms of business in a larger sense, is definitely the things I do are definitely applicable. And I'm now have other not-for-profit, like B2B businesses like that serve not-for-profits, but are for-profit companies that are coming to me to use some of these tactics mm-hmm. and some of these strategies in their sales process. So it's definitely so much of this is just could be sales for any kind of particular B2B or B2C actually. And something I'm particularly excited about, and when I mentioned that idea of hosting the call, is I'm very interested in the intersection of hospitality and not-for-profit. Mm. And frankly, that could be hospitality with customer service in a larger sense. So I'm really interested in how, and this is Will Gudara's book is so great, Unreasonable Hospitality. I love it. I send it to people all the time. But in it, Will says how great it feels to make other people feel good.
Yeah, that's so true. I
Shouldn't
love that.
Shouldn't we all be doing that all the time? You know, like in everything that we're doing. So yeah, a lot of what I do is really applicable both to sales and to customer service. So happy to continue those conversations and branch out in that way as well.
Oh, well, I hope you write a blog on that. And how do we find your LinkedIn post? Because I want to read that. Yeah. What's it called?
So, so if you just go to Kel Haney, LinkedIn, you'll find me. I just kind of post. I keep it very simple. It's just like the post that comes up on anybody's feed. But I'm super active on LinkedIn. So if anyone wants to connect with me there, feel free. You can also go to my website, which is kelhaney.com. And I have two freebies on there. One is 8 phrases not to use in fundraising.
Nice.
That you can download. And the other is like 5 strategies for specifically for mid-level donors.
I love that. I'm going to go check it out right now. Both LinkedIn
and your eight
strategies.
Thank you.
If anybody has questions for Kel, I mean, you know how to get a hold of her through her website, or you can also reach out to me. I think everybody who listens knows that I'm Diane Johnston. I'm a financial advisor with UBS. In Jericho, New York, and I can be reached at 516-745-8964. I admittedly have to say that for compliance reasons, but I am putting it out there because you never know. Maybe after this, someone will pick up the phone and want
pick
to
pick up the
call.
Phone and call you. I love that.
That
That's
would
awesome.
Be amazing. All right, listeners, so cool. Kel and I both want phone calls now.
Yeah, and I'll say also on my website, there's a connect with me button. Like, I'm happy to do a 30-minute Zoom with anybody. So if you're just like, that was really interesting, I'd like to talk to you more. I definitely am happy to offer up 30 minutes of my time in whatever way feels most useful to any of you.
Because you like making other people feel good.
I do. It feels great.
It feels good. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business, that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products or services we offer. For more information, visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.